Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Kabaza, and for today, we are getting into the economics news of the week, as we do each Friday. Just getting into the state of the South African economy, the global economy, just the economy as a whole. Now, coming off the back perhaps the biggest economics news in a while, that was Finance Minister Tito Mboweni's a budget speech last week. For today, we've decided that we're going to be focusing on the trade statistics for January 2021 that are coming out from SARS, or the South African Revenue Service. And to help us to navigate what all of this means, we are joined by Bobby Madev, who is FNB's head of trade and structured trade and commodity finance, just to give us some insight into what all of this means. And, if it's something that we should be worried about going forward. Bobby, greetings to you.
Morning, Mudiwa, and thank you for this opportunity. I think most important to start off with is the landscape of why do we see these stats, and what are the purpose of these stats on a month-to-month basis, and why are they created? So I think the key factor is, in most cases, that how do we see the potential opportunity of the country in terms of growth as far as trade is concerned. So what we do on a month-to-month basis, we try and disseminate the information. We try and get it from SARS. SARS gives us, obviously, they give us the data. From the data that we get, we then put it into sort of a readable, sort of understandable types of information that people can actually can understand what it means. So, for example, we take the overall data of our trade flows between the imports and exports, and then we try and analyze to see what is actually happening as far as the overall country is concerned from an imports and exports perspective. Why this is important is that at any one given moment, when we see our importers and exporters, it gives you a very good indication of what's happening in terms of a demand and supply perspective. And also, it also tells you from an economic perspective, the activity that's starting to happen or not happen. And when you do see declines in certain aspects, whether it's imports or export, you then question those issues, and then you dig deeper to try and understand why are we dropping. And we know COVID-19 has given us quite a bit of a reduction as far as our trade is concerned. However, it is important to check this on a month-to-month basis, so that at least, whether you're in whichever industry, I mean, we can even break it down by industry in the future for customers. It's important so that at least you know the demand supply for your product. And I think anyone that has this information at their glance can see the overall economic activity from an imports and exports perspective. Thank you.
Now, when it comes to, looking at some of those statistics, I understand, at least from what is being said here, that South Africa has a trade surplus. Though it narrowed in January, there is a trade surplus. Firstly, when we say trade surplus, understanding, just coming from economics, so we're saying that the balance between our imports and exports is in favor of South Africa. Am I understanding that correctly? And then secondly, for someone who might be listening, how is it that South Africa has a trade surplus when we're saying that things are so bad on the ground in terms of the economy?
Yeah, so I think it's a valid point, but I think that when we talk surplus is when we offset between imports and exports. So we have a basket of export that goes out, and that's an X amount of factor of value versus our imports, which has another factor in terms of a rand value. And we say then when we match off between the imports and exports, there's either a negative or a surplus. So in most cases, if there's a lot of exports, that means we are getting receivables or funding coming back into the country, so that South Africa is now getting paid for all the goods that have gone out. Normally, when it's imports, it's all payments going out. So when payments going out, it then does affect our balance of payments as far as the country is concerned, because as South Africa now has to make all these payments to the various people all across the world, and we need to make sure that we have an income coming in versus just outgoing flows of capital. And what the result is that you'll see that because of our exports being where it is at this moment in time, there's a net surplus, meaning there's more exports that have gone out versus imports. And in some countries, you'll find that a lot of countries that are totally dependent on imports, you'll find that they have a net, they'll have a negative sort of balance of payments purely because their imports outweighs their exports. And we are in a very unique situation is that if you look at our situation, we're sitting with a surplus, although it's not the surplus we expected, but we are comfortable to say that we're still at the surplus level.
And what is actually the quantum of this surplus, and where did we sort of start the year, and where are we now?
So I think if I just take you back to last year, our last year's landscape of the entire year for 2020, we had an overall surplus of 271 billion for the whole of 2020. If you look at just December, we had a 32 billion rand surplus. If you look at January, you see our numbers are sitting at rand surplus. Now, 11 million rand surplus is something that we happy with. But I think if we're still in a 15 billion and above rand sort of surplus, we feel a bit more comfortable. So this gives us an indication that something has dropped as of January. So when I looked at the data, and we're looking at this data today, it's telling me that our exports have slowed down, and however, our imports have started picking up. And our imports have picked up purely because of a reason, or there could be more demand for imports at this moment in time versus the exports. And it's just something that we've got to watch very clearly and make sure that our industries are actually out there getting orders, trying to get things going, and making sure that we don't have fundamental downstream issues, where it's production, whether it's ports that are getting blocked or slowing down, etc. We need to make sure that our goods are going out of the country as quick as possible so that we can ensure we start seeing some surplus.
Bobby, I want us to take a step back, if I may. Apologies if I cut you off there, just to understand, because from everything that you're saying, you know, the imports and the exports, you know, one really does get the sense that at least we are in a position where we are exporting more, we're receiving more money than there is money going out at the moment, which, you know, for any person is usually a good thing. But, perhaps it would be good for people listening to maybe get a sense of, as FNB and yourself in your role, where you guys sort of fit when it comes to, imports, exports. Are you guys helping businesses to fund exports, to fund imports, like where or how does it all work?
Yeah, sure. So from an F&B perspective, I look after trade and structured trade and commodity finance. Trade, meaning it's pure imports and exports that's coming into the country. And I'll get into the nuts and bolts of what we actually do there and how do we help customers. And then we got the structured trade and commodity finance area. Structured trade and commodity finance area is a bit more sophisticated from a perspective of ensuring that we can help customers that have large sort of orders, and they are unable to fulfill on some of these orders purely because of the balance sheet size and the magnitude of the demand and supply from a customer perspective. We then get into the involved in those circumstances. I'll give you some examples in that circumstances, but let me start with trade. Trading itself, we have a team on the ground that sits in every single region, and we go out and see every single importer and exporter that we have in each of the regions, or we make contact with those customers and we ensure that we help them wherever we can. In most cases, customers from the startups right through the sophisticated customers, you'd find that every single transaction we do, there's always nuances where we need to help. The LCs needs to be structured or payments need to be done. And sometimes clients are not aware of certain conditions. So you've got different types of instruments that you use. So you start with import letters of credits. Then you get export letters of credits. And both of these components have nuances that you got to now worry about. So if, for example, if a customer is importing a machinery from Europe or whichever other country, you need to make sure that the quality, quantity, etc., that our clients have actually requested, that we as a bank can assist the customers to ensure that in terms of the laid down instructions as per our LC, that the foreign entity or the supplier has actually adhered to. We thoroughly check the documents for our customer, making sure that the goods coming into the country are of caliber and of quality, so that at least we help and we don't have any issues. We make sure our clients save money in the process so that we don't have a to and from. And these are type of things and value adds we give. For example, on the exporter side, there's various inspection certificates, there's various requirements from different governments. If you're taking fruits into the Europe, you've got to worry about the insecticide, you've got to worry about certifications, you've got to worry about approval processes. You need to make sure that all these are conform to the standards required for your customers, so they have a peace of mind that a lot of these things have been checked and our possibilities have been made for these exports to happen. If you look then at the second product we have, which is the foreign bills for collection, you have foreign bills for collection imports and exports. This is mainly used with a lot of suppliers that know each other, but there's still a trust factor or there's still an issue of in terms of payment issues, etc. The clients would send the documents to for whether it's imports or exports. The customers would send documents to South Africa if it's an import to say either release the documents for the customer to clear his goods on the basis of a documents against payment or documents against acceptance. When it's documents against acceptance, it's purely to say that I know the customer has signed a bill that in the future, if he doesn't pay me, I can take him to court or we can do a litigation if we don't get paid. So we try and help the foreign supplier in that instance. From an export perspective, we'd send documents to the foreign banks to make sure that depending on what the relationship is with our customer, is to say whether you documents against payment, the documents against acceptance, and we then make sure we monitor that and we get the respective responses from those banks. So from that perspective, that's exactly what we would do on a day-to-day basis for me. Normal trade perspective, as opposed to the structured trade and commodity finance, which is more trade finance aspects. So when I jump onto the trade finance aspect, which is the structured trade and commodity finance, better known as STCF, in this space here, we normally assist customers to bring in large quantities of goods into the country. And we know our customers from a perspective in those circumstances receive some of these orders from large corporates in South Africa. And we do know that in some instances, our customers cannot stretch their balance sheets any further. We then take control and we then try and do a structure for our customers. Now, you have various types of structures that you do. Some of the structures enable a customer to bring in the goods, and we then make sure that the goods go directly to the importer, or I would say the buyer, and then the buyer in return would pay us, and we would have a ring-fenced account in that circumstances where we get the money, and then we'll give our customer the profits less all cost. In that circumstances, sometimes we give much more than just one-to-one funding. In those circumstances, it depends how we can fund. It could be anything between 2 to 3 or 4 or 5 times equity that the customer has, but it all depends on the structure that we put in place, and we see how secure the structure is, and we ensure that the payment mechanism to the bank is secured. Then you have other issues where we have customers who bring in goods, but they have it, their demand for those goods is over a period of 90 or 120 days. However, because the bank has supported the customer and brought in those goods, and we have actually given them quite a bit of money in terms of what they would never have been able to come up with, and if it's 4 or 5 times equity or 6 times equity, we then ensure we do a control under collateral management, where the goods go into a warehouse, and when the goods go into a warehouse, we have an individual from a collateral management perspective who controls that aspect for us and releases goods as and when the demand is requested from the buyers, and we then set off our lending from the deposits that we receive from the buyers, and that's how we would help those customers in those circumstances. Those structures enable our customers to grow in leaps and bounds. Now, If you don't do those type of structures, many customers will not be able to afford to actually complete some of these orders. And these orders are purely because they're based on demand supply. And the market, in terms of the market, if today I give you a typical example, South Africa consumes about 100 million phones per annum. We have a population of 57 million. In that circumstances, there are so many, there are just a handful of good importers in the country who need that assistance, and they get these orders. Some of them need to then fulfill on these transactions. We then make sure we help and try and bring these things in so that they can meet the demand supply in the market. Obviously, there has been a bit of a damper over the COVID period, but we know that demand supply is a continuity thing, that people require these instruments, changes of instruments. Some people export them into Africa, etc. So with the result, you need a sophisticated ability to try and structure something so that the customer can enable and deliver on his promise to the buyer.
I guess in a more practical sense, people are engaging in commerce on a daily basis. And one of the things that's been, at the fore, at least in the last couple of years, is the rise of e-commerce. And e-commerce becomes one of those things that enables, sort of more borderless, a more borderless world. But behind the scenes, from everything that you've just described to us, there is a lot going on. But I wanted to maybe get a sense from you that, if I say decided to start a business and, I say that, selling, okay, let's say I discover, an amazing supplier who's sitting in Europe who makes emoji pillows, because everyone likes emojis and, they want emoji pillows. And then I start, buying one or two here, and then I'm selling them here in South Africa on my online website, and people are enjoying these things. It's a couple of orders here and there, and I am an FMB client. At what point do you guys sort of become involved? Because I'm sure at some point you're noticing that there's some transactions that are happening between this person and a certain business in that part of the world, and it seems as if the volumes are increasing. It's at what point do you sort of go forward? Because I'm sure for the small business person, or someone who's starting out or who's growing, that demand for whatever it is that they're importing, they might not realize that there's all of these different options that are available to them in terms of the trade financing and some of the documentation that you're talking about, all of this stuff. At what point do you say, hey Mudiwa, we see that your emoji pillows are very popular and you seem to be bringing a lot of them from X country, why don't you let us help you when it comes to A, B, C and D?
Yeah, good question, Mudiwa. So let's start from the inception. I have an idea. I see something on the internet and I think I want to bring it. So there's different levels of sophistication of people bringing in goods into the country. So let's layer. So an individual sitting at home and he has this idea, he wants to start a business. He sees this bright idea of bringing in a pillowcase or whatever for emojis from Europe, etc. The question one should ask is that, what do you know about that pillow? What do you know about that supplier? What sort of homework have you done? And what market demand have you thought about as far as South Africa is concerned, that those are going to be in demand? Whilst we know that it's a big issue all around the world and we hear these stories about emoji as being like the number one brand across the world, you've got to do some homework. Secondly is the supplier going to be able to supply me the quality that I see in that picture? Very, very important. A lot of people buy things. When it gets delivered to your house, you then get disappointed and say, what the hell? I didn't expect it. So just take that word out. So I think those are circumstances in certain aspects. You need to make sure that you know the quality, quantity. And this you could have enabled when you could have flown and gone to those countries and checked it and be happy and then decide to bring it in. Today with e-commerce, you may have checks and balances. Like Alibaba, they do have insurance. They have a process for escalation, and trusted websites. So you want to be on one of those trusted websites that you think you can operate on, and obviously we all as we sit here, are people who have done it and who have imported something or something from overseas. And whether we got disappointed on certain occasions, or so on certain occasions we were glad that we got something that we seen and we liked, are factors that initially everybody has to consider, very, very important. Once we've passed that hurdle and we've done the first order, today on e-commerce, I know a lot of people can pay by their credit cards. But there's a limit that you can go up to on your credit card or on e-commerce from an exchange control perspective. Larger transactions in the millions, they have to go through a formal process, banking process, etc. Now, at the end of the day, whether you pay with your credit card or not, there's still a foreign exchange rate that happens. From that perspective, once you've swiped your card and you've imported something, it goes through the banking system. The banking system in return has to do a conversion and then pay the overseas supplier in the currency required. The bank in itself then still has an aspect of responsibility to fulfill on the transaction. So whether it's e-commerce or whether it's large transactions where we actually do physical trade instruments, the banks are always involved in the process. From a market perspective and from a distribution perspective, these are things that people then have to worry once they've brought the goods into the countries. How do we get it around? How do we get it marketed, etc.? So from an e-commerce and platform perspective, I love it. I think it's the future, but it's not going to enable all large transactions to go through it. There's a limitation, but it enables people to test, explore, even bringing things that they may wanted that they couldn't get on the local market, which helps everyone. And nevertheless, it still helps South Africa, because why? At the end of the day, we are either going to export, we got websites here that we export, and we will import. And at the end of the day, it helps the economy grow.
You know, as you're talking, I'm just thinking about, you know, I guess the e-commerce factor, because I think that might be a big driver. You know, we see something on someone's website, but just the process that you've described, you know, I don't think any of us really sit down to understand what it takes to get something to our door. We simply think that something is coming from a warehouse somewhere and it's just coming to our house. Yet behind the scenes, there might be a whole, you know, litany of processes that are actually happening. So I guess taking a step back to the actual numbers, you know, where we were before, when it comes to sectors, you know, we were just using a hypothetical example of, you know, emoji pillows and stuff like that. But, you know, the real situation on the ground, what sectors are actually, you know, giving South Africa money right now when it comes to, you know, the export market, and which ones are actually, you know, proving to be, I don't know, do we consider them to be a drain, or do we sort of say that, you know, that's life, that you buy some things and you sell others?
Yeah, so Madiba, I think important factor is that we have various sectors. They all also depends on the demand in terms of the value of the goods that go out to the country. If you take chemicals, etc., in high volume and value, we have motor vehicles that goes out from an export perspective. Minerals, you know, we a lot of our minerals do go out to various countries in the world. I mean, China is one of the big buyers of a lot of our minerals on the continent and in South Africa. Machinery and electronics, where we have beneficiated and sent it and exported out of the country. And then obviously different types of metals that are available that needs to be exported. So we do know that certain components of our steel structures do go into Africa, where we export. And then the food, I mean, then just general food, fruits, citrus, animal, vegetable fats, etc. These are things that are in high demand that goes out into various aspects of the world, where South Africa plays a important role. You know, one of the key things recently, I mean, last year I was on a farm where lucerne was actually grown. And I was taken back to understand the demand for lucerne. If you take the Middle East, they one of the big buyers from South Africa of lucerne, and it goes to the entire Middle East at this moment. And it's because they've got also animals and cows, etc., that they need to feed, and they don't have the climate or the land type where you can grow this, and it's such demand. But that's just one aspect that I'm talking about. There's raisins, there's various types of foods that we export out into the world. So I think those are all buckets of excellence that you'll see that actually helps our balance of payments. From an import perspective, I think South Africa is dependent on a lot of components, as we do know that we have a large sort of motor vehicle manufacturing sort of scenario. We import a lot of components. We do import equipment for motor vehicles and some ready-made vehicles that come into the country. Also some metals we import. For example, coil steel in huge demand in our market space, used in various industries, that's also been imported on certain occasions. It all depends on the supply in the local market. If the local market can't supply, then clients will go to overseas markets to make sure that they still can meet the demand of the domestic market so that they can ensure that there's a continuity for a lot of these factories to continue manufacturing as opposed to come to a stalemate if there's no supply in the market. And then just various, as we know, a lot of our machinery and a lot of electronics is imported into the country, from cell phones to tablets, laptops, machinery for manufacturing industries, etc. We have not built a massive manufacturing hub for this, and it's we know the expertise comes from various European countries, Asia. We have a huge dependency for these things from those countries. So yeah, that's pretty much the baskets that I can tell you. And then you get various other layers, obviously chemicals in different sectors, in the different H codes from SARS, etc. They're broken down into various granular levels. You then would see from various types of chemicals that are imported into the country, etc. Not the fact that we don't manufacture chemicals, we do, but by far a lot of the raw materials are brought into the country for manufacturing.
As we end off, Bobby, I guess the big one is just maybe understanding from your point of view, where do you see this balance of trade going for the rest of the year? You highlighted the fact that it was the surplus was above, the 30 billion mark when we, left December. But by the end of January, you're sitting at, it's narrowed to about 11 billion. And though you say, things are comfortable, how long are they going to be comfortable for? And, the finance minister has, indicated that we're going to get, growth for this year, and it makes sense, as the country rebounds. So where do you see things going on the trade front for the rest of the year? Are we going to see a continued narrowing, or are we just likely to see that over the year there will be an expansion of that surplus?
Yeah, so I think when I look at the overall trade for the last year, etc., whilst there was a surplus, the overall trade is not where it should be. It could be much, much more. It could be in the 400, 500 billion per annum sort of surplus. We do know trade has slowed down. We do know that various countries have been locked down. We know that COVID-19 has had a serious impact on the overall enemy. These are facts that we all are aware of, etc. Reality of it is that how do we get the momentum going? How do we get the overall world starting to trade again? The pre-COVID to start seeing those normal numbers coming back in. It's the momentum of people getting comfortable and feeling much more optimistic from a perspective of that the COVID-19 is under control, people are vaccinated. We see all around the world people are now starting to get vaccinated. There's a hope, and there's a sentiment of people feeling a bit more comfortable to start doing things, going to do business, coming out of business, and all these little aspects have a huge impact as far as trade is concerned. Once that happens, you then see the demand supply starting to rise all across the world. We do see the fact that I presumably think after June, hopefully we'll see a rise in our trade. And it's a timing factor. If you hear from the US, they're hoping to vaccinate all their people or their citizens by May. And it's going to have pockets of those type of excellence. And in those type of economies, you're going to see people going out and starting to do what they're supposed to do from a perspective of buying, selling, importing, etc., because the confidence level is up. And I think after June, we as a country also will start seeing a demand for exports and maybe definitely imports, but we'll see a demand. Remember, at this moment in time, how many of us are sitting from home and working from our tablets, etc., and doing virtual calls every day to everybody, etc., and we haven't been out, we haven't bought some of these luxury things in the malls, etc. It all has a spin-off on the economy when people, the movement of people is back onto the ground and we start seeing people purchasing luxury items or things that they like, etc. I mean, I have not bought any new T-shirt or a shirt in the last year. So I think it has a huge impact, and I'm pretty much confident that from June onwards, we'll start seeing a bit of a rise in our imports and exports.
So that's been us with Bobby Madoff, who is the head of trade and structured trade and commodity finance at Banking Group FNB, giving us some insight into what South Africa's trade statistics looks like as brought out by the South African Revenue Service, explaining what that balance is about, because he's basically saying what's being measured at the moment is, you know, just a reflection of whether South Africa is exporting more than it's importing, and whether South Africa is getting more money in than it is sending out in terms of imports. So because of that, he's just saying that things South Africa is in a comfortable situation at the moment, though the surplus has narrowed somewhat. And he says this is important because it does give a reflection of what's going on in the real economy, what you and I are doing in terms of operating, just going about on a daily basis. What are we demanding? Where are these goods and services coming from? And he also just took us through, what it actually takes to import and export, at a large scale. You start off small, but, over time you grow that business. And there's a lot of admin and processes in place, from a regulatory and a financial point of view that need to be met. And, his team is specializing in helping, people to make all of that happen. Just ending off talking about what's actually going to happen this year, and obviously none of us know what will actually happen, but just looking at the history, he's saying that our trade could be at much higher levels, upwards of 400 billion just based on what happened in the past, which means that there is potential for South Africa to be doing way more trade than it is at the moment. As people get more vaccinated, we hope that that trade does go on. Bobby, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mudu. Thank you.
This is Mudu's Take.
Whether we know it or not, a lot of businesses are engaging in international trade, whether it's, businesses applying to other countries in terms of, making some products locally and then sending them out to other countries, as is with the motor vehicle manufacturing sector in places like East London. That is an export-driven, sector. A lot of cars that are coming being made for BMW and Mercedes are being sent to other markets, and that is counting in South Africa's favor in terms of these trade statistics that we're talking about. But at the same time, they're more niche products. Earlier on we were sort of using a hypothetical example of an emoji pillow, someone bringing it in, etc. But there are certain South African craft items that are being sent to other parts of the world, and one has to wonder what all of that actually does in terms of making up South Africa's trade. Because when we talk about a country's trade against other countries, we're not necessarily talking to say that one government is paying another government, but rather that, the people, the individuals and the businesses in those countries are engaging in commerce with people, individuals and businesses in other countries, right? And that's, that is what happens on a trade front. And in just going through it, one doesn't realize all of the complexity that happens behind the scenes. I recently ordered something from one of the local shops And I remember that I've actually been waiting for this thing for about 6 weeks. And a lot of it is because this thing is coming from another part of the world. But you only appreciate that it's coming from another part of the world when there is a delay in getting it to you. That's when the merchant or the business actually says, oh, by the way, we're actually getting this thing coming in from overseas. You know, we're sorry for the delay. There's been, you know, ports, ships, prioritization of certain markets over others, etc. That's when that conversation starts. But for me, going onto the website and saying, oh, I want this, you're just thinking about it from the point of view of, I found this shop that's an export of South Africa that seems to have this product, and I'd rather just order it online as opposed to going to the shop and actually finding it there. You click, you check out, you pay the amount of money, and a few days down the line, when you still haven't gotten the product, now you're asking the questions, right? And I think we need to be asking more of those questions on a daily basis and just wondering, you know, how many of us are actually engaging in this trade, and at the same time, how can we better support, you know, local businesses that are trying to send their products out? Because at the end of the day, South Africa is like a person. We're trying to get more money in than we are spending with the rest of the world. Important conversation. Hoping to have Bobby again in future so that we can follow up and just see if any progress has been made on that front. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudi Ogabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.